In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Like every one of you, I enjoy a bargain. Getting brand name stuff cheap is great.
Actually, they're all on sale right now for up to 40% off.
Shop 50% off all tees, 40% off all dresses, and 30% off all jeans.
These jeans are only $19 at Old Navy!
And kids' jeans are $12. And this weekend, you get $5 off just for trying them on.
And that right there is how this whole thing starts. Right now, I am scrolling through the email address I use for online shopping, and I see $20 dress shirts. I see jogging pants, two for $23. I see $45 waterproof winter boots. And these aren't deals for knockoffs, either. These are big-name brands. And so, yes, I'm tempted. Especially because the last pair of cheap boots I bought just last year are already leaking. This is the vicious cycle of fast fashion. And this is how it traps us. And today, we'll learn the cost of that. Because in order to feed this beast, the fashion industry needs volume, which means new products. And if there's new product, then there's old product. And what do you think happens to that old product, to those perfectly good but unsold pieces of clothing that need to come off shelves in order to make way for next season's fashions? By now, you're probably getting a feeling that the answer to that is nothing good. And you are absolutely right. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Megan Coley is a national reporter with Global News. Before that, she was one of the founding editors of this podcast. Hello, Megan.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going really well. We're glad to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
You're here to talk about how fashion is killing the planet, basically. Why don't you explain where your story began from? It was kind of an organic discovery by a person.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I'm plugged into all these parenting and family groups on Facebook. I'm not a parent, but I do a lot of parent reporting. And one of these posts went viral really quickly, like overnight. It was from a woman named Natasha. She lives in Toronto. And she posted a series of photos of garbage bags found outside of a store we all know called Oshkosh B'gosh. It's a children's clothing store. Mm-hmm. And when she looked closer in the bags, she discovered that there were just piles of clothing, toys, and other kids' products that had seemingly been destroyed slightly. There's something slightly wrong with all of them. You know, the toys were missing a couple pieces, things like that. And they were just sitting there in this garbage bin right outside the store. So she posted and basically deduced that the only way this could have happened is the store either destroyed the items themselves or they came destroyed, which seems less likely. Mm-hmm. And then they disposed of them so that nobody would be able to use them.
Why would, and this is, we're going to get into the bigger picture of this whole thing, but on an individual basis, why would a store destroy its own products like that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's definitely a question I had. Apparently, it's actually very common and widespread. And what happens in a lot of these stores is they don't sell product quickly enough. A new product comes in and they need to make room for this new product. So what they do to the old product is essentially claim it's been destroyed or damaged, you know, in transit or it came that way. But really what these stores are doing is proactively destroying the products so that they can't go anywhere else, so that the brand can't exist anywhere where they can't control it, essentially to protect the integrity of the brand.
What did this store in question say about it once this post went viral?
So in a statement to Global News, when we asked about this post, a spokesperson for Carter's, which is the big parent company of Oshkosh B'gosh, said their policy is to, quote, dispose of damaged or unusable product to prevent any potential harm to our customers. We contacted the store in Canada and determined the items in question were damaged or unusable and disposed of properly for safety reasons. They also said that in the last 5 years, they have donated products to children's organizations in the U.S. and in Canada. So my sense from this statement was that they're sort of bouncing around the question we asked, which was, did you destroy the products? And, you know, upon doing further research, it does appear that this company and several other companies in Canada and around the world are doing this on a regular basis.
Well, you and a couple of other reporters sort of looked at the big picture of this beyond this one incident. And what did you start to find when you started asking questions beyond this company?
We talked to a former Winners employee. She worked there in 2008. And because we wanted to know if this was actually happening, if employees were actively being instructed to destroy products, because it seems so far-fetched to me when I started reporting on this story. And what she said was, yes, absolutely. We would frequently be instructed to destroy, you know, pairs of perfectly good shoes. Or she also brought up patio dishes. Like, they would be instructed to smash patio dishes so nobody else could use them. And basically, we asked myself and my colleagues, we asked an environmental expert about this, and he said he understands it to be a very widespread problem because of something called planned obsolescence. So with this larger fast fashion industry that has become so popular over the last decade or so, what's happening is companies are intentionally making their clothes out of worse fabrics or intentionally creating products that will deplete or not be usable within a few years so that you're forced to go out and buy maybe the exact same item or product, but basically so you're forced to continue buying. So you're always on that fast fashion sort of track. What this does is it puts a lot of pressure on the retailers to make sure that product is moving quickly. So if it's not moving quickly enough, if maybe a product is not as popular as they anticipated, then they will instruct retailers and people working in the store on the lowest level. We're talking as young as like 16, 17-year-old high school kids who don't know any better, to cut up a perfectly good pair of sneakers, for example.
When we say destroy this stuff, like, what do we actually mean? Can you kind of describe what they do to the clothes?
Yeah. So, I mean, as I've said, it starts on the individual level. You'll get employees to literally take a pair of scissors to a perfectly good hat or jacket or mitts, as we saw in the photo on Facebook that went viral. There was a picture of mitts, which really stuck out to me, like little kid mittens with the insides overflowing out of them because they'd clearly been hacked in like a perfect straight line. But on the larger level, we have companies like Burberry, which is like a couture fashion, high-end fashion brand, admitting to sending their unsold clothing to the incinerator to be burned, because they don't want the exclusivity of their brand to be diluted if they were to donate those clothes and have, you know, maybe not the richest fashion person wearing them.
That sounds insane.
It does sound insane. And that's why I was so shocked to find that it's happening all the time. Like, some of the brands we all know and love, H&M, Nike, you know, everyone from like Zara, the lowest level, all the way up to worldwide fashion houses like Burberry are doing this on a regular basis. And no one seems to be regulating it.
Is there any movement out there to help companies redistribute this stuff, to stop this from happening? Is there anything that can be done on a bigger scale?
Yeah, so we looked into some nonprofits that exist, some organizations that have popped up in response to this practice. You know, one nonprofit is called Remake, and they will help companies take those textiles and literally remake them into something else. But they found that 80% of discarded textiles end up in landfills or burned. So what they're seeing is, you know, not enough companies reaching for this option of either donation or recycling.
Is that just because nobody knows that this is happening, so it's difficult for the companies to feel pressured?
I think there is a big problem with accountability. You know, as we saw, even when we reached out to these brands for comment, one thing we struggled with was to get them to actually admit to doing it in the first place. I reached out directly to Winners, and they said there is, the quote, there is little undamaged merchandise that goes unsold, and we typically donate that merchandise to charitable organizations. And then I pressed them and said, well, we have someone claiming that they worked at your store and they were instructed to destroy clothing. And they they declined to respond or confirm. So I think what we're seeing is a lack of accountability on these brands. And if they don't admit it's happening, they, you know, no one's asking to see where their textiles are going after the fact. There doesn't seem to be any policy in place in Canada, the least, to force them to share that information so they can really claim, you know, whatever they want to claim. We also saw some brands saying, oh, we send all our unused textiles to our headquarters in the States. That seems to be a pretty common practice. And when it's in the States, no one knows where it goes or what happens to it.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
The interesting thing to me is that they all sort of replied, and I shouldn't say all of them, but a lot of them replied to you by saying, well, the merchandise that we destroy is damaged. What does that mean?
This is one word, you know, a lot of them did use damaged in their responses to us, and it's such an elusive response. We couldn't get them to elaborate on what that means. I don't know how common it is for products to arrive at a store damaged, especially if they're, I'm picturing like soft, a pile of soft like shirts in a box. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure how those could get ripped right down the middle in transit, but this does seem to be the claim that they were damaged already. And a lot of companies too will claim that they're unsafe for the consumer. But I think a lot of moms who maybe have 3-4 kids growing at like the fastest rate imaginable would love that shirt, and they'd happily sew up that rip down the middle and, you know, have a kid have a shirt for the 2-3 months that they'll fit into it. So I think that was why the post originally resonated with so many parents, because they were just so offended that all of these clothes that could go to the less fortunate were just being intentionally destroyed.
Well, you started with one Facebook post and then went to the companies from there, but you ended up talking to environmental professors about the impact of this. Can you give us some kind of sense of the scale of this practice?
Yeah. So unfortunately, as we were saying, because there's no demand on these companies to report the practice, it's tough to get an idea statistically of how frequently it's happening.
Well, what's the impact when it does happen?
What we do know is burning clothing produces greenhouse gas emissions. That's a no-brainer, easy one. But even what we do know and is widely, you know, well-documented is the carbon footprint of fast fashion, generally speaking. So, you know, these fibers are often grown using things like pesticides, herbicides, and artificial irrigation, which is all very damaging to the earth. The transportation of clothing, so if it's manufactured in China but it's intended for a store in Canada, even just getting those clothes from A to B is a massive toll on the earth. And then once they end up in the landfill, let's say they are destroyed or damaged, and then they're sent to a landfill, they could sit there for up to 200 years. That's how long these even natural fibers take to decompose. Synthetic fiber never decomposes. So literally, we're just sending these piles of textiles to sit there forever with no plan for, you know, where they will go in the future when they could have been worn.
And part of the problem from this is the way clothing now is not made to last as long as it used to. And you, I know before you worked as a global news reporter, you worked with us, and before that you worked at Flair, a fashion magazine. Can you kind of describe over your career the rise of fast fashion that you've seen and how it took over?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think we've seen a shift as recently as within the last 10 years, the shift from things that you could buy that were sort of coveted. I had a lot of friends at Flair who still made a point of buying, you know, one expensive item over a few months instead of several cheap items over 1 month. But I think what people are feeling is the pressure to always be up on the trends. And that's sort of where fast fashion came from, was this pressure to always have a different wardrobe for spring, summer, winter, fall. And the brands then responded and sort of it created a vicious cycle where companies like Zara are super comfortable cycling in their whole look, you know, each season. But what it does on the company is creates a massive waste burden because they're creating way more looks and way more product than there are people to buy it.
Are there any movements out there towards, I don't know, slow fashion?
Yes. And I'm actually really glad you asked that because I think it's something that doesn't get enough attention. And a lot of people are doing, a lot of people I know this year personally are doing like low buy 2020 or no buy 2020. And I think with Australia on fire, with the Amazon having been on fire, just all these horrible climate change emergencies happening around us, people are starting to tune into how their actual purchase and spending habits can affect the earth. And I think one of those ways, you know, to lessen that impact is this slow fashion or no buy years. I think it's an amazing movement and people are definitely out there doing it.
Where are clothes like that still available? Because I walk through a mall and granted, I don't shop for fashion very much, but it's all $15 this and $20 that. And I know from buying them in the past that I'll wear them three times, four times.
And I think this is the constant struggle with the slow fashion movement, as you called it, because it is exclusive. It is only available, I think, right now to people who have the money to afford it because they need to place investments on these items instead of the $15 Zara shirt or whatever.
Right. You've got to save up for $150 pair of jeans that will last you 10, 15 years.
I'm talking even like $300 pairs of jeans. And some people don't have...
I'm cheap.
Well, you know, for the real quality that we're talking about, for the quality where you're saying, yeah, I want to have these jeans for 10 to 15 years, I think you need to put that money out. You need to put that investment in, really.
And a lot of people don't have it.
And some people, most people, I would say, don't have the disposable income to commit to that. It's also hard. I felt a lot of pressure working at a place like Flair because I was a, you know, entry-level employee getting paid a sort of average salary. But working at a fashion magazine, I felt a lot of pressure to be up on the times and reflect the trends of the season. So I, you know, much to my dismay, I hated every time I walked into those stores. But I was going to the H&Ms and the Zaras just so that I would have some interchangeable items for each season that I could afford but still helped me look like I sort of knew what I was doing when it came to fashion.
To play devil's advocate for one second for the Burberrys and exclusive brands of the world, I do understand their desire to keep their logos to people who have actually paid full price for the merchandise because that's their business model. I'm wondering if in the course of reporting this, you found any potential solutions that could, you know, help brands still own their logos and own that exclusivity, but also not just go burning merchandise when it could be used.
So I think one big, large-scale solution would be textile recycling. There do appear to be tons of organizations and companies around the world that are actively doing this and are interested in collecting your textiles, whatever those fabrics may be, for other purposes. But one really simple one that I hadn't even thought of until my colleague said it was that if you want to donate the products, why not just remove the labels?
Mm-hmm.
That seems pretty straightforward to me. And actually, if you look at stores like Winners, they often will do that with the clothes that they are given. So I think that could be a potential for Burberry anyway. I really don't want them to see, I don't want to see them burn another like 30 million pounds worth of product. That would hurt.
If someone is shocked by learning about this and they want to do something, what are the next steps? I guess first in their own life, which you've already kind of touched on, but also are there any places where they could take their efforts to kind of help organize around it?
Yeah, so I think working at the shelter level is a really great way to feel like you're making a difference because those places are constantly looking for donations and really just making those drop locations, those pickup locations, you know, whatever information you need to get out into your community, making that known to people, even friends and family. I think that helps a ton. The more people I talk to about having just like a pile of clothes, you know, you want to donate, but you don't really know where to take it, just sitting in your hallway. Everyone has that garbage bag, I think, stashed away somewhere in a storage room or a closet. So even just making that information known to people could be really helpful. I think, too, holding these brands accountable. When it came out that Burberry had burned all of those clothes in 2018, the hashtag Burnberry started trending, and people were actively sort of committing to a boycott of the brand until they committed to changing their practices. And I think it's honestly in those grassroots organizations that we need to start to see the shift. I would love to say there are some easy changes for the individual to implement, but I think what we more need to see is executives in the capital F fashion world saying, we're not going to do this anymore. There has to be a better way. And coming up from with a strategy from the top down.
Thanks, Megan.
Thanks for having me.
Megan Coley is a national reporter with Global News. That was The Big Story. If you'd like more, thebigstorypodcast.ca always has you covered. And if you want to talk to us, suggest a topic, comment on a topic, yell at me personally, you can head to Twitter and tag us at TheBigStoryFPN. You can also find any podcast in our list of podcasts that now totals over a dozen at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or in your favorite podcast player, whether it's Apple or Google or Stitcher or Spotify or some other one that I have never heard of. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.